Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Game Devastation Podcast. My name is Frost. I'll be your host today. And joining me today is one Troy Hewitt. What is your title now? Because originally you were community dude, and now you're like marketing bro. What's the official title?
Oh, you're killing me. Not marketing bro. Head of communications.
It's something to do with talking to people and
making
things,
the noises and stuff.
And announcing and the Bill Cosby sounding talk.
I can't believe you just did that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. I didn't know the official title. That's why.
No worries.
We're joined by Troy today. Today we're going to talk a lot about community development and about becoming a community manager. So, Troy, how are you, first of all?
I'm really good. I'm really good. Really glad to be talking to you, my old friend.
Yes. It's great to have you on the show. So, Motiga, what is it? What is the game they're working on, and what do you do for them?
Well, so Motiga is a developer in the Puget Sound. We're in Bellevue, just right outside of Seattle, and we are working on a game called Gigantic, 5v5 online combat with a giant guardian that's on your team.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, we talked about this before the show started, but when we used to work together on WildStar, you were saying like, hey, you know what, Frost, I'm going up to Seattle. I'm going to work at this company, Motiga. We're going to work on, it's kind of like a MOBA. And the first thing that popped in my head was like, oh, sweet Troy, what are you doing?
Why would you do this? Yeah.
Why would you do that? But you know, seeing the gameplay and the type of experience that you guys are making, it looks pretty cool. Can you talk about the differences between say like a traditional MOBA and what you guys are doing?
Yeah. Well, there's a few things that are different. I mean, we don't have the lanes. We don't have the, I always go through this really interesting exercise when people first play the game. They ask, especially before we really announced what was going on, they would say, oh, that looks like a MOBA, or what are you calling it? What's the genre? And I'd say, well, why don't you sit down and play it and then you tell me what it is? And they're like, after they play, they're like, MOBA? I mean, just be like, it's just different. We've got the verticality. We've got, we're borrowing a little bit of inspiration from, all your favorite play types, all your favorite roles, blending them together. I've only recently become comfortable saying, yeah, we're MOBA plus. It's trying to find the right words. You end up getting into an argument with yourself over, you know, describing what the game is all about. So it's got some MOBA elements to it. Certainly it is a massively online battle arena. Lots of people playing. It is an arena and you do battle.
It seems to me like there's more, it's like Team Fortress a little bit in style somewhat, but
yeah.
But then even then the character design is very, it's almost kind of Disney Pixar, and then
yep.
You've got this weird mix of all those things in a game, but then you have almost Overwatch, but you guys were out announced before then.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you have this weird mix of all these things, and it looks like there's a lot more movement and kind of.
It's definitely more fast paced.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it looks exciting. I'm stoked to play it. Waiting for beta. Yep. So here's the thing, man. I want to go into what it is to be a community manager and what your definition of a community manager was. You were just at GDC talking about this, right?
I was, yeah. We talked about tenure in community management.
Okay. So what is a community manager? What do they do? Explain to me what your definition is of a community manager.
So my personal definition of a community manager is basically a facilitator of conversation between the people who are making the game and the people who are playing it. There are a lot of organizations that approach community management. For each studio, they have their own approach. For me personally, I'm not going to be the gateway to conversation, where all the information has to come through me and no staff can talk to the community. As a matter of fact, I'm the exact opposite. I feel like there's a lot of really smart people that are making games, and with just a little bit of coaching and a little bit of empathy, they can be, empowered to have discussions directly with gamers. The other thing that's important is that gaming has evolved and the gamers have evolved. They understand what it means to make a game. So if you try to get in the way of that discussion, you lose credibility. And so for me, community management is all about making sure that if there's information, that the right person within the studio is presenting that information to the people, in your community.
So do you think that this is something that's sort of a newer approach to community management, or is this something that you've always kind of done throughout your tenure as a community manager?
Well, it's something I've always done. And I think you being one of the victims of my particular approach, you know, as far as like just saying, hey, talk to our community, like let's, you know, this is what's bubbling up right now. Let's address that. Let's get on a stream and let people who normally, in this business wouldn't get a chance to address the community. You know, I think, what's new about what I'm doing now is, I'm evolving my approach to community to the degree that I'm actually bringing, our community leaders into, the process, quite literally flying them out to, events. We flew out 40 plus people, gigantic, community leaders, to PAX, South. And they helped us run the booth. You know, there are so many events going on. And when you have a big event, you know, like a PAX or even a Gamescom, you know, you definitely want some developers there, but it can take a studio down for a month, preparing for that show. And then you fly out the entire studio or as many people as you can to actually run the show. The other option is to bring in people who are hired, shills, that you hope you can train well enough. Rather than do that, I basically just said, you know what, I'm going to go to the people who are the experts, and those are the folks that are actively playing our game and building a community around the title, and fly them out, because it's better to hear from someone who's played the game and enjoys it, than a developer, because, you know, sometimes we are kind of up to our eyeballs in our own Kool-Aid. Having a more authentic voice, your community speaking for you at these shows, really allows us to get the real message out there. And we find more people. So every time we've done this, we started at PAX Prime, where we flew in some folks to help in the press room. Well, and actually we started even before that. We announced, July 15th, we flew out some of our community folks to talk with, press who were going to share, you know, for the first time, information about our game. And we've just sort of snowballed the approach, to, you know, to PAX East, where we, you know, had 50 some odd, community peeps running the booth, running our, what we call our theater space. It just gives us a chance to do panels and that kind of good stuff. But it was really all revolving around community people. And so we were able to not really, take the studio down, while we were trying to get the word out about the game.
If I'm looking to get into games, this is something that I really like to push on the show, is I'm looking to be a community manager. I'm looking to get into this. I mean, how would I go about doing that? Is something like this a good way to get in? You know, if I'm talking to you or if I'm talking to other people, like how do I do that?
Absolutely. It's get involved. Identify ways to be useful to the community. I will tell you that throughout my career, I'm trying to do some quick math on how many people I've hired. I can tell you that I've hired at least 7 to 8 people for their first games job because of what they did in the community.
Interesting. Okay. So really it's just getting involved maybe with a project you're passionate about and trying to get in with the community in some sort of way and really probably talking to CMs and getting in that way.
Absolutely. And just being a leader, without having to be prompted or coached or, you know, being that person who can manage a fan site and map your values, your leadership values and just your community building skill to what the studio is trying to accomplish. They'll pay attention. They'll see you. And you know, like I said, I just actually, hired someone right out of the gigantic community because of what they were able to do in Alpha. So it's not just the external stuff. It's also what kind of feedback do you provide? What kind of contribution do you make? Like if you are in an alpha test or a beta test, what are you doing to help improve the product and also build a healthy, engaged community?
So, let's go back a little bit. Let's say it can be at Motiga, it can be at any game that you've worked on, but how do you start building a community from your position? I mean, because a lot of times you have games that aren't even announced yet, and you have people that are trying to work at building a community, right? So how do you get the start of a community going?
You know, that's a really good question. From my vantage point, if I'm looking at what I did for Motiga, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And so when I transitioned from Carbine to Motiga, people were paying attention and I was able to kind of take those contacts with me, which I think is a really important part of. If you want to be a community manager, you need to know or engage with people in that space. There are tons of fan sites that pop up all the time around specific games. Getting involved with those, knowing where the noisemakers are, and then once you've got your plan in place, reaching out to them, providing them access. If I were to come into a game unknown and no contacts at all, spending a good, month just looking at what's happening in other games and reaching out and getting involved, would probably be my first sort of act. But yeah, it's an interesting question. It is a challenge to build a community around a brand new, product. And when I was hired on at Motiga, it was actually, we didn't have an announced product yet. We had just a studio. And so fortunately, because Motiga is, we've got tons of really, really talented people who've done some pretty amazing things. It wasn't hard for me to get traction. But really what it is just making sure that when you start broadcasting that it's a discussion, that you continue to talk with people who show interest, and, you just kind of pick up more and more people and give them more and more opportunities to share information, exclusive kind of, looks into the studio. That was not as difficult as it might sound. But it certainly got easier when we had a game to announce.
Yeah. I mean, that. Clearly, anytime you're like, we're going to have something cool, don't worry about
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
As opposed to like, here's some really cool stuff, you can check it out. So what do you think, from the community manager position, what do you think the most difficult part of that job is?
I think the most challenging part of the community manager gig is that it just never stops. You are basically, gaming is a global phenomenon. You've got people who are playing in Europe with people who are in North America. It's hard to find a moment to catch your breath. I'm just looking at my inbox right now and I have like 4,000 unread emails. And a lot of the emails that you get as a community manager are, hey, so-and-so replied to this, or, so it can be kind of tough to, you get that whole, signal to noise issue where you're really trying to focus in on the stuff that's really tough to identify. You can't always have individual conversations, especially as your community grows. You've got to really address it as a larger group with some really tactical sort of like, okay, this person is the head of a particular fan site. I'm going to share information with them. This person's an up and coming leader. I really want to make sure they know that I recognize what they're doing. And it doesn't stop at 5 o'clock. I will leave the studio sometimes at 6, sometimes at 10, sometimes at midnight. When I get home, I'll have people who are waking up and, in their part of the world wanting to, connect. So, that to me is the most difficult challenge, is just finding a balance between, including people and not being overwhelmed by, the information that's coming in.
So, I also wanted to ask, how did you get your start in community management?
So, my background started at the, in community building, started at the Y. I worked at the YMCA for 7 years, as a, community connections director. Community is just in my blood. It's just what I've always done. So I worked there for 7 years, and loved games, loved gaming. My first, MMO was Ultima Online, and I watched the way that they were doing community and thought, I can do that, and essentially got involved, as a writer for a fan site. Then became an editor, got really heavily involved in that aspect. And then when a gig came up, an opportunity to work on the Matrix Online, that big hit of a game, I took it. And that's just, I walked in and kind of said, here's my background. And at first they were like, you know, you're a crazy person. There's no correlation between doing sort of nonprofit work and online, you know, community building. And I made my case and they hired me.
Okay. So then from there, was that when you went to work on Pirates of the Burning Seas? Was that after that?
Right. Yeah. Right after that, I went to, Pirates of the Burning Sea, worked with, Flying Lab Software. And then after Flying Lab, I was there for, man, it seems like forever. Right after that, then I transitioned over to Carbine, where I worked there for 5 years.
Right. And then, off to Brotiga.
Yep. Brotiga. Yeah.
So you've been up there for what, like a year, a little over a year?
Yeah, a year. Well, actually a year and, I think I'm at 5 months now.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you guys, I don't know if you've made a release date announcement yet or are planning to.
We're saying 2015.
Okay. All right. So we're looking at this year when it's coming out. So, do you see like spikes in community involvement and people wanting to get involved at certain points? I mean, because you don't have like a hard date, maybe this is harder to identify, but do you see like more people starting to get interested as conventions go on? Or is it like, when do you see more people kind of getting involved with games? Is it like, is it earlier? Is it later? When does that happen usually?
You know, it actually happens, you know, conventions are an important part of that, but the reason why they're important for us, because we're really doing, everybody says this, we're doing it differently, but, you know, we're really embracing community as the driving force, for all the activities that we do. So much so that there, you know, we don't have a marketing person. We have a publishing organization, but things are kind of cut a little bit differently at Motiga, and really it boils down to community as sort of our number one thing. And so each time we head out to, you know, PAXs or other events, we do see spikes in people who are interested. You know, there's a couple really great things going on here. One, they're letting me do things here, that some studios would be a little nervous about. In addition, the game is great. And it's really nice to be able to have those two things and really be able to innovate. You know, like I said earlier, we're kind of snowballing right now. Each time we hit a convention, we meet, you know, 4,000 people who enjoy us. And so we, you know, continue to kind of grow that group. And it also helps to, that our studio is not afraid to have conversations with game press. But in the context of, you know, sharing more information, we're not really, there's a lot of studios that kind of take a sort of machismo kind of approach to things, and we're going to kick your butt, play our game, blah. We just don't do that. We're like, we're gamers who are making games for people who enjoy playing games, and we prove it by, you know, come play games with us. So it's, to me, that's where those spikes come in. You also see, once you kind of get a nice group of people, you are able to hone in on what the issues are that they're most interested in hearing about. And then you continue to write articles and, you know, expose members of the team, to share their thoughts on everything from, you know, analytics to gameplay balance and, you know, all the things that are important to gamers. And so, you know, that's kind of, a real messy way of saying it's sort of an organism, and you, every once in a while, you get a little bigger because of something that you've announced or because of an event that you've done, or an article that you've written that really has traction, with gamers. So that's kind of how that works.
Cool. So, how has the community changed the game that you guys are working on?
They've made a fairly significant impact. I'm trying to think of what I can share. I think, well, here's an interesting, piece of, an example, you know, so we have, you have your team of five players and then you have your guardian. And because of the feedback and because of the opportunity that we've given folks to actually, you know, sit down and talk with our developers, you know, via voice, at the end of every test we try at the end of every test to sit down and have, you know, a voice conversation with our players saying, you know, what'd you think? What'd you like? What did you hate? We, because of that openness and that feedback loop, we've really sat down and evaluated the behaviors that Guardians have and have adjusted them to reflect what the community would expect, you know, in a match, that they become a little bit more active and engaged. You know, everything from, you know, people want to be able to ride them, or people want to be able to, you know, have more of a connection with their Guardian. I would say that is one of the one of the biggest impacts that they've had. But of course there's balance and map design and all of that stuff. But the changing Guardian behavior is a pretty fundamental one for us. And really it rests on the shoulders of our community for making those changes.
You know, as part of the show, I typically blast out on my Twitter, you know, hey, this person is coming on, give me some questions. And I got a bunch of questions from, people in the community. So I'm going to ask a bunch. This one's from Real Blank Space, Viking streamer extraordinaire. Who taught Troy, or let me just read it directly. I was going to try to translate it into like your name, and I just derped real hard. who taught him, how did he learn to establish communities that are the strongest, healthiest in gaming?
You know, honestly, it's going to sound real corny, but it is everything that I learned about building online communities. I learned through the why. You know, I've worked with every age group. You know, from small kids in camp to adults in having discussions about, you know, interfaith kind of stuff, which is pretty heady, pretty heavy stuff. But it's because of what I went, you know, all the things that I had the opportunity to do and all of the, lessons that I learned at the Y that I think that's what really drives most of what I do, you know, as far as community building. For me, it's really important that people feel as though they have a voice and that they feel as though they can be mad. It's okay. It's cool. It's cool to be angry, and you can even be angry with us. Just, you know, don't be abusive. And I think that is, that approach, it really comes from sort of the fundamentals that the Y is all about. I feel so corny kind of saying this, but that's really where I cut my teeth.
Gotcha. So this one is from Krista H. And you may have addressed this. I don't know. We didn't use this nomenclature, but, she said, you could ask about the community coaches. His answers are epic. So are the community coaches what you were talking about earlier with the people going to events and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. The community. So, you know, game dev, the way that it works, and Frost, you can relate, but, generally speaking, you don't create the tutorial, until you've got the game kind of locked down, and then you go back and you tack something on the front of it that gives people context on how to play. In our game, because of that, and we were getting so many people who were playing, what would happen is, typically speaking, it takes about 3 matches for you to kind of figure out the function of a match. And then you can start laying on some tactics and some, you know, kind of, you know, sort of like chess in that way. Like, you can play a game of chess, but it takes you a few before you start going, I'm going to do this. And so what I did is I reached out to the community. I just said, hey, we're going to have a lot of people who aren't making it past the third match because you all know how to play. A new person gets in and they're just getting curb stomped, before the, their first 2 matches are just painful. So let's do this community coaches, community mentors thing. And the community, embraced it in a way that I didn't expect. There's always helper communities and people who are interested in helping out. But these people on their, you know, just because we asked, decided that they were going to become community coaches and they were going to do this stuff and help people who were new. You know, listening to them talk about matches, you know, while we're hanging out in, a voice, channel, for our alpha testers. It's incredible. It's different. I don't know. It is something that I've not seen in such a devoted way, in other, you know, games. And then as the community coaches sort of evolved over time, they just became the go-to kind of experts on game mechanics. They were fantastic. And so that just evolved into an opportunity for me to, fly these people out to our shows. We fly them out. We pay for their hotel. We of course get their pass. We've done this so many times now that it is one of the most rewarding and, important moments, that I've had in my career. The community coaches, you know, at the end, it's like that feeling that you get, that you got when you were a kid after summer camp, where you didn't want to leave. And it was, you know, we've had people send us tearful, you know, but sweet sort of thanks for, you know, for letting them be a part of this. Whereas on our end of things, we're like, thank you for taking time out of your life to hang out and talk about a video game. You know, as much as they enjoy being a part of what we're doing, you know, our entire team is so, we just feel so lucky to have this chemical mix going on that allows us to meet these phenomenal people. And you know, it's sort of the community coaches is sort of the fundamental push to prove to the world that we can do competitive online gaming without having it be so toxic and abusive. So far so good, but the community coaches, they're making it happen. They are, I love doing community. I love my job. I am not qualified for anything else in this industry but doing community. But this is, these people are like family to me. They're good peeps.
Right on. So this one, is from, I think it's Calm. It's K-A-A-M. So I'm going to say it's Calm.
Calm.
That sounded a little Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry. How does the role of CM evolve during development and the launch of a game?
Interesting. You know, I think that there are two sides of the coin. There's the internal communications, there's the external communications. And I think at the beginning, of the process, you are really trying to establish your internal sort of, hey, this is how we do, you know, community. You know, for me, it's like I said, facilitating communication. You got to really help developers, you know, whether they're an engineer or they're, you know, your support, leadership. They just need to understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish. You know, embracing controversy, you know, diffusing the rage of, you know, these are the things. I am your meat shield. I'm the one that gets in front of you when things go south. I'm also the one that shares all the good news. I'm also, the one that helps people understand that an angry fan is probably the most important one to listen to. And there's a message to be kind of drawn out of, you know, that I remember back when I had this ability to kind of read forums and go, okay, yeah, okay, I see what that is and send it off to the right person. What I didn't realize I was doing is I'm filtering out all of the vitriol and the bile and the, you know, the abusive stuff. And so what I did is I just kind of copied a bunch of texts and sent it off to one of the designers, and he came in and he was like, I hate this community. I hate this. I can't believe this. This is just, you know, I was thinking, why are you so angry? And then I read it and I realized I left all of the real shitty comments in there. Cause I just kind of dismissed it as, you know, not that, that's not the important stuff, you know, and, it kind of taught me a lesson that, you know, so that, that first, your first job as a community person is to establish within your studio what drives, what you do, what, why you're here. After that, you work to let your community know what you're all about and what you will accept and what, you know, what sort of the social norms are. And then for the rest of your, you know, for the rest of your working days, it's a balance between the two, making sure that people kind of understand that, you know, my approach comes with, some danger. For instance, when there are developers who get a little too close, to the community in the sense that they sort of create this vibe that there are cool kids and not cool kids. So I've got to kind of get in front of that. Make sure, you know, in the past I've dealt with developers who will, you know, they love the community so much and they're so, like, it's such a new experience for them to get, to be exposed to people who really like what they have to say, that they'll pop on the weekend after having a few cocktails and have a conversation with community, that can sometimes go a little south. And then on the other side, and that it, getting players so engaged with what you are doing that they're talking on your behalf, sort of a double-edged sword. If you don't do right by one of those folks who have that microphone, you can see some fairly upset and very visible people, saying some pretty nasty things about you, your approach, your game, or a specific developer. So that's kind of how you balance it out. That's sort of the life cycle of a community manager.
So this isn't a community question. This is one that I just came up with after you were talking about that. What is the process for you guys over at Motiga on reacting to community feedback? You were just talking about kind of combing the forums and listening to things and reading stuff. How do you then take that information and disseminate it to the appropriate people or not, right? Or, don't do that because maybe there's something in there that they don't really need to hear.
For us, it's really a matter of collecting the information and then sort of reframing it in a way that we can say, hey, what I think you're saying is this. And they will say, yeah, or no, or yes, but. What I find is that collecting it and then disseminating it, you definitely want to know where the community is at. But for me, it's really more important to make sure that the people who are making the game, the people who are the designers and the people who are kind of tweaking those numbers, are the ones that are in the conversation. So it shouldn't be a surprise when I share, or someone on my team shares, sentiment around a certain feature or a certain piece of gameplay or, a policy or whatever, because our team should be engaged at the community level and having a discussion, asking the right questions, and not being afraid to say, okay, I'm not quite sure I hear what you're saying. Could you elaborate? That shouldn't just be coming from me. So to me, that's kind of the feedback process is one of those things where, you definitely want to know, you want to make sure your finger's on the pulse of what your community is needing. But you shouldn't be the only one engaged in that conversation. I also see the community team as, advocates for, like, they understand we're going to hit a trouble with this particular, insert feature here, based on this. So oftentimes you also have to be sort of ahead of the curve before the community goes, wait, we hate this. You can kind of, get in front of that and say, hey, I from my perspective, I feel like we're going to run into this issue around this particular decision. What's our reaction going to be to that? And oftentimes what I say to the community as well and also to the team internally is people aren't always going to like what we do. Like they're going to, and to the degree that we're going to do a thing and they're not going to, we're not going to change a decision. Like we're going to stick to, a design approach, explain the intent. Oftentimes players will want a thing that has some fairly significant impacts on overall game health. That's just kind of part of the deal. And so making sure everyone's aware of that is, that social contract, which is we won't always agree. We will, make mistakes. We'll try to make good when we do. And oftentimes we'll make a decision that you don't like, but we'll tell you why we're going to stick to it or change it, based on the circumstance.
I'll ask some more, community stuff. And then we'll get back to some other questions. So this is from Basleil. How did the name Aether come about? This is your in-game handle. Where'd that come from?
I just sort of picked it because of its, the idea of something like it came out of the ether or that kind of, it was a little bit of a play on that. It was also just a little bit of the, when you look at sort of the historical use of the word and, there's a lot of, I also liked being able to sign things just the AE symbol, which I don't know what the hell it's called. But there's like there's mythological origins that I think are pretty cool. And they're sort of kind of positive, like it sort of, I'm trying to find the words for it. It's like just a moment of clarity and a moment of, you know, here's this information for you. And then there's other cool aspects of, you know, just the mythological and sort of elemental backgrounds, but I won't nerd out on that.
This is from Avid Guru. What is the most awesome unicorn that you own?
Oh man. Okay. So I want to say this.
All right. I'm excited.
I did not ask for unicorns. They have been forced on me and I have accepted it. It always comes from a place of, you know, of fun and kindness. But I will say that, probably wow, this is a tough one. I'm at my office right now. I'm looking at my desk and I have 9 unicorns, in various, or unicorn things, which sounds kind of unseemly, but, I got a Rousedower unicorn, Rousedower being one of the, sort of the, what were they, like sheep, and the Enigma group, that were really a big part of the community, handmade it for me. And it's a Rousedower with a little unicorn horn and you open them up and it's just a really sweet message on the inside. But that's one of my favorites, I think.
Okay. So this is from the MMO Econ PvPer on Res. And you've kind of talked about the positives of this, but he has a question about the risks. Troy has always leveraged a lot of community in his convention booths. What does he gain and what are the risks?
You know, what we gain, we get to see the game through the eyes of the people who play it and hear what they have to say about it. There's an authenticity where if a person who has never been exposed to the game that you're working on, they come up and they want to know more about it. If they hear from you as a person who was talking, that you are a member of the community and you know these things and we have gone out of our way to include you in what we're trying to accomplish. It makes people go, wait, whoa, that's, like, you know, the studio flew you don't work for the studio. And, I think it creates a real moment where a person can say, you know, this is what I love. This is what I don't love about the game. It just opens up that dialogue that definitely can be seen as more authentic than just hearing from the developers. The bad side of that, and I have not experienced it, there's a couple things. Working shows, so tough, like so exhausting. So, I mean, and the fact that these folks will come and be a part of our show presence, they don't quite know what they're getting into until the second day when you have, you know, worked maybe 14 hours, you went out and went to a party and drank a lot, then you have to get up in the morning and be fresh and fun and, you know, do it all over again. And, you know, PAX Prime, that's 4 days of that stuff.
It's exhausting for sure.
It's exhausting. And to have a community member come in and, you know, game devs, I think, you can kind of feel like I don't have a lot of sympathy for game devs who have to work long days. But I definitely can see, you know, within our community coaches and in other, you know, studios where people have been like, wow, I am I can't do this anymore. You know, and the other piece of that, you know, that to me is the only real downside. I've not experienced anybody who went to an event and then left going, boy, I sure hate the developers and the game. It's just all good stuff, except for that, the potential to burn out the people who are most important to you, your community leaders.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure they also, after they get nice 8 hours of sleep when they get home there, you forget about all the hard stuff. So
and that's absolutely true. Once they get over the con crud that they inevitably pick up or share with me, even when it's all said and done, you know, at PAX East, we got everyone together and did sort of a final evening. And I realized that we had like you know, we flew 50, maybe 50 some odd people. I realized that, our events person had, booked a room for us. I realized that for us to all kind of hang out and drink beers and kind of talk about what went on, that we had like 70 some odd people. So we ended up kind of grabbing more and more people who were just really into the studio vibe, the game. And it was a pretty phenomenal deal. But my point being that at that evening, here we are in Boston, it's freezing. Boston, the difference between Boston and, let's say, San Antonio for Pac South couldn't be more different. Pac South is kind of slow and a little polite. Pac East is a little fast and kind of rude. but they came off of that feeling really good still, even though they were exhausted from, what is essentially a whole week away from home and family and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, that was it for the community questions. But I got two more for you, and then we're going to call it an interview.
Sweet.
So first one, early access is kind of a newer thing, newish, where they allow people to pay to get access to the game. Like H1Z1 is a great example, right? It's in early alpha. You pay to play. And then you kind of provide feedback and then the development kind of changes. How do you think that's changed community management with that model of game development?
Well, I think what happens is the stakes are higher. Once a person has contributed financially, whether it's, early access or, your Kickstarter made it, or whatever, once you have exchanged cash for service, the entire thing is different. You have a different vibe in the community. It becomes less of a, here we are to help. Here we are to help make the game better. But once I pay, then it can really easily shift towards, I pay your salary. I hate this idea, and so, it's a real turning point in your community once you start, exchanging, funds for their exposure to the game. What was the second part of your question?
There was no second part. It was just, how has it changed community management more than anything else?
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think even from the development standpoint, it's a very, it does raise the stakes in that when you have to talk to people and you say, yeah, this is our general plan. And then people are paying. I think that they now expect their voice to be a little bit louder as a result.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, okay. So last question here. How do you differentiate between the vocal minority versus the community at large? Because there's a lot of times in forums and things like that, you were talking about community leaders or just maybe people that, have, got some good posts out there that are kind of big in the community and they say, I don't like this feature. But maybe they're not speaking for the community at large. They're just speaking for their own, from their own perspective. How do you differentiate between those two?
It's one of the most difficult parts of your job because if you look to the forums as your only place of gathering information, you're already in the wrong spot. Forums should be a place where information is shared. Pre-launch forums are interesting and there's a lot of great data and stuff that happens in there. Unfortunately, if you don't have the strength of sort of social contract, you haven't established the norms, your forums, when they go public, can turn into a real cesspool of ignorance and anger and rage and have sometimes very little to do with what it is to make a game. I back in the day, I used to be a proponent of forums and really was, kind of loud about it, about needing them because there was in the community manager world and the group that does this kind of stuff or this kind of work, they believed that forums were a waste of time. I have and I defended to the death the fact that I thought forums were important. Now I don't believe they are as important. I think that they're a great place to have discussion and dialogue.
Do you think that's because of stuff like Reddit, because of stuff like Twitch and things like Twitter, well, any of that stuff. There's just a large amount of places where people can talk now, right?
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's almost like another issue. I think when you look at your forums, people will be more inclined to abuse you as a developer than they would be, you know, if you go to a Reddit thread or, you know, or a subreddit or a, you know, or a specific, you know, fan site devoted to, you know, what have you. For me, the important thing is data, sharing that data, being very clear about that data, and looking at taking those loud voices and seeing kind of what they're all about, but not engaging in a negative way. You don't want to shut them down. You certainly don't want to make them angrier or more confused. But being very clear about why you make decisions and broadcasting that as much as possible. But the other thing is, all of my communities, this is just, I think, and I think I speak for a lot of, studios, there is the public forums, and then there's another layer that people don't see, and that is us reaching out to people who are experts in their particular, you know, let's say, you know, they're focused on econ, or they're focused on PvP, or they're focused on ranged characters, or they're focused on tanks, and they have the data behind them, like that's a person that fits the mold of this particular deal. We want to know more from them. They'll be invited to sort of a private discussion, and I've done that at every game that I've ever worked on, because it's important to hear a human's voice that represents, a particular group, without weighting it so much that you make changes based on, you know, a person's kind of hysterical reaction to a game change or what they're doing on the forums. After launch, forums become less useful. I'm right now really wrestling with the notion of what do we do at Motiga? Do we just send them all to Reddit? How do we manage this in a way that allows people to feel like they're still being listened to, but gets rid of sort of the old timey forums approach? I have yet to stumble on a solution. So if anybody out there has an opinion, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing to me, because I tend to agree with what you're saying, simply because with when I was on WildStar, the Reddit was probably where I checked the most often to see, because I love the idea of, you know, promoting whatever the most popular thing is and reading through that and seeing what people are saying from that regard. And it seemed like it was a mix of Twitter. It was a mix of Reddit. It was, watching on Twitch and seeing what people were playing and what they didn't like. And yeah, ultimately it's all about that data, finding out what you can do. So yep. Yeah. Well, Troy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Super pleasure.
I appreciate you coming on the show, and thank you everybody out there for listening. Troy, is there anything you want to plug in particular while you're on here before we end the show?
Well, we're adding people to the Gigantic Alpha on a weekly basis to the tune of thousands. So if you want to check out what we're up to, head over to gogigantic.com. Check out some of the new stuff. We've got our brand new video up there, and you can also sign up for the Alpha.
You didn't get your boy Frost in there?
Oh, yeah. Righto.
Well, cool. Thank you, sir, so much. And thank you guys once again. Adios.
Ciao.